and to open maybe in the near future, that is a penile transplantation.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It means to take a penis from another person and then to transplant to the male transgender. That will be, I think, the top of this type of surgery.
Welcome to Pulling the Trigger, the podcast showcasing interesting, unusual, and controversial people and ideas, where no subject or topic is off limits, completely uncensored. I am your host, Mark Hughes. Pride Week continues. This episode is one I'm particularly pleased with because I got to talk to someone over the phone who is internationally renowned, and it was very cool to be able to, for the person to give me his time, and you know, it's one of these things where a guy like this doesn't have to talk to a guy like me, where I'm just running this Mickey Mouse for now podcast, but I really appreciated him giving me his time. I think he's someone who really wants to educate people on these subjects. And, you know, he shed some light into some things that are, you know, when it comes to trans issues, there's a lot of misinformation out there. And you hear a lot of things that are not scientifically backed up with no data and things like that. And it's nice to talk to an expert who believes in data-based research and evidence-based research and things like that. I'm just grateful to have him as a guest. I'm going to let him do all the talking. He's an internationally renowned surgeon specializing in sex reassignment or gender affirmation, as it's called. He's written all kinds of stuff. He's you know, he runs a world famous clinic in Belgrade, Serbia. Yeah, I don't know what else to say. Oh, the one thing I will say is it was recorded over the phone, and the quality is, it's pretty good. There's some choppy parts, so I did the best I could, but you'll get the gist of it, but there is some parts that are just kind of, and, you know, I'm not dealing with $1,000 studio here. Almost. I'm spending a lot of money on this. But anyway, let's meet Dr. Miroslav Georgevich.
Okay. Yeah, so it's perfect. How are you doing over there in Belgrade?
Yeah, and Belgrade is rainy, very, very bad weather because we have a summer now, but we have a rain in more than 3-4 days, so it is very, very bad weather.
It just started raining here in Vancouver.
in Vancouver it is a normal, I think.
it rains more than half the year here, actually, but we didn't have any for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just want to make sure I'm pronouncing your name right, Georgevich.
Yes, Georgevich, yes.
Dr. Miroslav Georgevich.
Exact.
Okay, perfect. And so welcome to my show. I appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule to let me interview you. How's business?
That's business is fine, you know. Business is always fine. Why? Because we are too busy due to a huge amount of new persons who are coming with requests to have a new genitalia and then to feel their life to be completely normal.
Right. How long have you been doing this work for?
Oh, it is more than 25 years.
Oh, wow.
I started in the early 90s, so now, especially in the last 10 years, it is a very, very huge business. Why? Because we perform more than 500 reconstructive surgeries per year. That is a very, very huge amount for one center.
Yeah, and I think you're serving a lot of not just Europe, but the world.
Yes, yeah, so we have persons who are coming for a different type of genital surgery from over the world, but majority are coming from United States, Canada, that is from North America, then from European countries.
Huh. What got you into this work specifically?
We are working, I told you, in a genital reconstructive surgery that includes congenital anomalies, like boys and girls who are born with some absence of genitalia, for example. Mm-hmm. So we are going to reconstruct this. Then we are going to work with different penile deformities, female genitalia deformities, then some urinary reconstruction, and finally with the transgender medicine. Very huge amount, because we are one of the rare centers in the world who covers all ages, from birth till age, old age.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons that I wanted to interview you is that I read some articles that said you have started noticing a lot of people are wanting reversals now.
Yes, yes. It is not a lot. It is not a lot, but it is. We can discuss about a number on two ways.
Okay.
First of all, if we say a lot, it means thousands and thousands, but it is not true.
Okay.
But if we discuss about the major center could perform the almost all reversal surgeries published in the literature, we are the best center for this. Why? Because we published a couple years ago, we published our first results in 7 persons.
Okay.
And now we performed 4 more reversal surgery, and we have approximately, I think, 12 or 13 new candidates for reversal surgery. That is no more than maybe 25 generally, but this is the biggest number of the persons who regret their first surgery and who requested the reversal surgery to be done in my center.
And now maybe we'll just put that aside for a second. Now the initial reassignment, or there's two different terms for it these days. There's reassignment and what's the other one?
Another synonym. Yes, this is a gender affirmation surgery.
Affirmation.
Yes, this is the right term, because we used the old one, that is sex reassignment surgery, but now we changed this in our nomenclature, and now the right name for this type of surgery is gender affirmation.
Affirmation, right?
Yes.
And so, for a male to transition into a female, is that a fairly? I know one of the surgeries is more complicated than the other. Could you explain that one?
Yeah, of course. Yes, of course. Everybody agree with the some facts. The first one is that to create a female genitalis is a little bit easier than to create a male genitalis. Why? Because due to functional reasons. I'm going to explain more.
Okay.
So when we are going to make a gender affirmation surgery in male to female, it is a little bit simplest. Why? Because many of surgeons, like gynecologists, general surgeons, urologists, plastic surgeons, can remove the penis, and then to create vagina and vulvar part from remaining penile skin, glands, and then. And this surgery is reserved to be one stage surgery. But if we discuss about opposite transition, that is a female to male, you have to reconstruct a neophallus that will be completely functional for voiding, then also for erectile function. And you can now imagine what means to create a channel for voiding that is longer than 30 centimeters.
Right.
It is like you know, it's very, very difficult part, and for reconstructive urologists, absolutely a huge challenge. And also another thing is how to give a functional sexual activity, that is a penetrative sexual intercourse. So for this reason, we have to put different penile implants into the neophallus. And now, the major complication rate coming from these two parts of surgery, that is a functional part. We can create acceptable aesthetical neophallus using the tissue from the person, but if you discuss about function, this is a very, very disputable. And this is a new challenge for us, and this is the new field that I started to develop and to open maybe in the near future, that is a penile transplantation.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It means to take a penis from another person and then to transplant to the male transgender. That will be, I think, the top of this type of surgery. And we are working on this field also.
Who would be a donor for such a thing? Would it be someone who died or someone who doesn't want their penis themselves? Okay.
We have two options. Now we are going to do this first time in the world from some cadaver donor.
Okay.
But in the future, my idea is very simple, and not only my idea. I think everybody can agree with me. So if we have, for example, 1.4 million in North America, I discuss about transgender persons. We have in this amount of persons, we have almost 700,000, for example, 700,000 penises. And if you discuss about another, we have 700,000 uterus and ovaries and then. So my idea is very simple, to create one center, then to match to all the transgender persons and to find who is very, very similar with another one, to match this and then to make the finally very nice transition, that is penile transplantation or uterus transplantation to an opposite side and then.
So basically switching.
Yes.
Well, you get mine and I'll get yours kind of thing is what it would end up being.
Yes.
Oh, okay. And you're saying you're getting close to being able to do this?
I'm sure that we can do this, but this is a very, very huge project. For the beginning, I would like to show to the world and to my colleagues that it is possible to transplant the penis into the female body. If we do this with a success, we will open the huge, huge door, and I'm sure that many societies and very, very huge amount of doctors will associate us in the aim to continue to work on this field and to make this to be a routine procedure.
Wow. Yeah.
But you know what is the most important thing? The most important thing is to show on the first case it is possible, you know.
Yeah.
For example, I will tell you something very interesting. Maybe you follow the newspapers, especially yesterday, today. All newspapers over the world reported our success. We transported the uterus in monozygotic twins 1.5 years ago. And yesterday we had the first delivery from this uterus.
Oh.
That is a very, very big success, you know, in transplant surgery and also in delivery and then. So it was the first one. Now we are going to do more and more. So I hope that in 5 or maybe 10 years, all centers, good developed centers with a good experience will continue to do this as normal procedure, you know.
Wow, yeah, yeah, I that's actually news to me. I didn't follow that. I'll have to look that up when we get off the phone. Yeah. So this is very cutting edge, and you said you've been working on these kinds of things for 25 years. I guess that the way the mechanics and the logistics of the surgeries have probably changed quite a bit in those 25 years.
Yeah, of course. Maybe a huge difference if you compare, for example, beginnings of my career and now, it is completely not comparable. Why? Because conditions are much better today. We have better equipment, we have better instruments, surgical techniques are developed to be better and better every year. For example, we introduced in the Belgrade is very well known, according to more than 20 original surgical procedures that we introduced into the practice in the world, in the surgery. So now medicine is in a very good position to develop very quick. And I'm sure that we will see the miracle in maybe 5 or 10 years. We will see. You know now we have a special 3D printers who are going to reconstruct complete organs, you know, for the development from some cells and then. But you will see. We are not too old, so we are going to follow this and then to see what will be happened in the field of medicine in the next decade.
I was just going to say, how old are you?
I'm 53 years young.
Oh, tons of time.
Yeah.
50 more years to do this stuff.
Yeah. minimum.
Yeah, minimum. Does something that just occurred to me, does stem cell research help any of this?
Yeah, of course. I also, but we don't have, for example, in Serbia, there is no possibility to develop this type of medicine that is regenerative medicine and stem cell development. Why? Because it is a very expensive discipline, you know, of the science.
Right.
And it is reserved for very rich countries like Canada, United States, and European well-developed countries, you know. But we are here to follow this. We can do something new in the field of surgery because for surgery you have to have some talent and also experience and then good ideas to promote something new in armamentario of surgical techniques.
Wow. Another thing that I know is some... Years ago, someone told me that, as they were called then, gender reassignment surgeries were actually, in some cases, dangerous. Some patients who would want them to be done would be turned down just because it was too dangerous. Is that correct?
No, today, thanks to good conditions, this surgery is not more dangerous because everything is under control. Mm. It could be dangerous like any other type of surgery, you know, because you never know what's happened with one human body during the first anesthesia in the life, you know, and then during the first surgery. But I never heard about some danger case in this field of surgery in last 10, 15 years.
Okay, so this must, yeah.
Complications are always possible, but all of the well-known complications are not too severe. That is not solution how to solve this. You know. So we have to calculate the complications also, especially if you work too much. But we are very experienced to discover these complications and then to do the best for the patient and then to fix this. But not too dangerous, definitely. Maybe dangerous in some not developed countries, or maybe dangerous if you perform this surgery maybe in a garage. You know what I tell you, to move your car outside and then to put one table and to put a patient to cut a penis and then to create something. It is dangerous, but in modern medicine, it is not dangerous, definitely.
Did it used to be dangerous, though? I think it was female to male, apparently, someone told me once, and I don't know if this is correct, was actually more because it was so it required more effort and it was harder to do.
Yes.
It was more dangerous.
Yes, it is more dangerous for several reasons. First reason is that you have to remove the female internal organs like uterus and ovaries. It could be something of a bloody procedure. Another thing is that you have to use some microvascular procedures to create a neophallus, you know, to use blood vessels of the body and then to join these blood vessels with the blood vessels of some type of tissue that you are going to harvest from another part of the body, for example, from back, from abdomen, for tight, and then. So sometimes it is possible to develop some of complications like thrombosis, necrosis, dangerous situation, for example, for leg or for arm, and then. But I told you, in the modern medicine, we have a very nice way how to recognize and how to fix the possible complication.
Oh, okay. How do you? If you do reconstruct a penis or construct a penis, because you're not reconstructing it, is it able to ejaculate?
It is not possible. It is not possible. Why? Because for ejaculation in a genetic male, there is a special process. You have to have a testicles, then to make sperm and another fluids, you know, from prostate, and then to empty these fluids, and then at the time of orgasm, you know. But if you have a female, there is no prostate, there is no vesicle seminals, there is no testicles, and then so there is no fluid that could be pushed out during orgasm.
Right.
So ejaculation is not possible.
Is organic erection possible in a constructed penis?
Yes, an organic yes. Is organic yes in a genetic male. And it will be possible if we stay on our way to transplant the penis from one person to another person. It will be possible. But especially if he transplant the penis together with the testicles, for example, it will be like a normal genetic male, like you and me.
Right.
But in all other options, when we are going to make something like surrogate, like some neophallus, and then it is absolutely impossible now.
Okay, I think I've heard. some information comes to you from the internet. You never know what's real or whatnot. I've, from what I understand, is a man who has undergone genital affirmation surgery, so was a woman and has transitioned into a man, needs to use a pump to get an erection. Yes. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct. I will tell you something about first about the internet, and then you can find a zillion different reports, and you are in situation to ask yourself, is it true or not?
Mm-hmm.
But today we have a very good way how to check everything. It is very simple to open the scientific journals and then to find nice reports based on evidence-based medicine, right, and then to see who is really responsible and who is a center for this or this type of surgery.
Mm.
So if you track this, you will find, if you compare, for example, last 5 or 10 years, you will find maybe 5-6 centers in the world, really centers who perform this. So you can go to track to internet and then to read too many fantastic things, you know, but very often it is not true. Like in a bus in your city, then you can see some words like this is a Union Bank, and then, but if you are going into the bus, you will not find the money, no. But right. you can read on the bus that is a bank or something like this. So this is very similar. Regarding situation in female to male, I will tell you something that I heard from my patients who confirmed me this.
Okay.
We have one special technique that we developed, very nice, that is named metoidioplasty. This is a surgical procedure when you use the clitoris, enlarged clitoris, to create a small penis.
Okay.
This small penis is very functional. This small penis is very sensitive and possible for oral sexual intercourse, for orgasm, for everything. And this person reported me that there is some fluid from the new created channel.
Oh.
This is possible, but it is not ejaculation.
Right.
Why? Because we use the labia minora and we use the urethra and this tissue from female genitalia to create a new tube for voiding. And now, during arousal, this epithelium, this mucosa, started to product the fluid and then to empty during orgasm. It is something like ejaculation, but not real ejaculation. If you check the volume and the quality of this fluid, you will find that it is not the same like in a male ejaculation process.
I guess it's similar to female ejaculation.
Yes.
Is it true that female ejaculation is a high concentration of urine? Do you know anything?
Sometimes yes. Yeah. Sometimes yes, because we use. Part of mucosa of urinary tract to create a new channel, and this part produces some fluids mixed with the urine, with some amount of urine, and then this is something, you know, something like ejaculate, but not real.
Okay. So when a patient what is the process, I guess, from beginning to surgery for a patient to get approved for surgery or to get the surgery? I bet there's some screening criteria and things like that.
Yes, yes, we have a very strong criteria, and we are going to use a good defined criteria coming from WPET. This is a world. WPET means World Professional Association for Transgender Health. Mm-hmm. And according to this, any of candidates for gender affirmation surgery has to prove to psychiatrists and to have two letters of recommendation. It is a process around 1.5 years. During this evaluation, psychiatrists or psychologists follow the person, person, family, girlfriends, boyfriends, and then they are going to confirm that we have a really transgender person. After that, with these letters of recommendation, person comes to endocrinologist to start with the hormonal therapy. This is a therapy based on the hormones of the opposite gender, that is a gender that is a gender of the person who wants to be, you know.
Right.
So this process is approximately 1 year. And then after 2 or 2.5 years minimum, we have a person who is ready for transgender surgery, that is a gender affirmation surgery. It is not a quick process.
And what kinds of things would be exclusionary criteria for someone who's wishing to get this surgery or the transition?
Yeah, you have many of patients who are maybe part of gay or lesbian population and who are not real transgender persons. So in this case, they never get a letters of recommendation for transgender surgery. That is a good. Another thing is exclusion criteria, the patient who is very obese, for example.
Okay.
Because you cannot create anything in an obese patient because it is not a good candidate for any type of surgery. Everything is very, very risky, you know.
Right.
So we always recommend to prepare our patients to have a body mass index no more than 24, 25. Very rare. If we get a letter of recommendation from psychiatrists that this surgery will help in weight loss, and then we accept the patient who is a little bit obese and then perform surgery only for the reason to help him and to support him in his further life. So it is a very discutable, and very often we stay together and then create a board meeting and then sit together to discuss about every patient who is risky, and then to discuss what is the better for him or for her.
Do you ever so someone who wants to get gender affirming surgery? They have, I get gender dysphoria. Is that a term?
This is a good term. Gender dysphoria. Yes.
And do you ever get patients who apply to get the surgery who don't actually have gender dysphoria?
No. I never accept patient who is coming to me with a request to have a transgender surgery without a letter of recommendation that is a really confirmed person with the gender dysphoria.
Mm.
Never accept this. Because if you accept this person, you will make a mistake and then he or her or she will be a candidate for reversal surgery later.
Mm. And is what? How does? I understand you're not a psychiatrist, but you do this work a lot. How do you determine if someone actually has gender dysphoria or not? What are some of the symptoms or signs or characteristics?
This is a very simple thing. Everybody knows how to diagnose. Why? Because this person shows the characteristics of the opposite gender from early childhood, from 4 or 5 years of age. So very often the parents gave us the details about life in a childhood, and this young person start to do everything that is in characterized for another, for opposite gender. So it is very simple to start to do on this, and if you are going to follow situation to include in evaluation a full family, friends in a school, teachers, and then it's very simple to conclude.
Okay, and so you, which brings us into a good subject of the reversal. Now, are reversals more complicated than the affirmation surgery?
Yes, always more complicated. Why? Because, for example, if you have male to female, and if you create a female genitalia from male organs, and then you have a regret, you will have artificial female organs created from male organs. So now you don't have enough material to create again a male organ. So this is the main problem, that you never had enough original tissue to do easy gender confirmation surgery for reversal. And this is the point that nobody accepts these persons, and for this reason almost all person who showed this contacted us in Belgrade for Riverville.
Oh, it, like they couldn't. I think the term is pass. People just they weren't right, able to assimilate, like, for lack of a better term.
Complication rate is very higher, and then but accept this person's fight because our experience is really very huge. Why? Right? Because I told you at the beginning of our discussion, we are one maybe a unique center in the world who covers the treatment of congenital anomalies. We have, for example, a boys without penis. We have a boys with two penises, and then that we are going to create some normal genitalia. And our experience based on our treatment of our patients who were treated, who underwent reconstructive surgery due to a very disaster anomalies is huge. And for this reason, we know many secrets. We know many tricks and traps how to help to our regret persons who needs a reversal surgery.
And we were saying earlier that you've had a number of people. It's not thousands, but it is a notable number of people who do regret this. And from what I've read in some of the articles about you, is that there's actually been controversy around reporting that people regret. What's your experience with that?
No, I discussed with you about regret requests for reversal surgery. Mm-hmm. But if you read the articles about regret in a transition, general transition, hormone transition, surgical transition, and then in a person who never showed interest to have a reversal surgery, the number of these persons are higher.
Mm.
You can find some psychiatric reasons, psychological reasons, some unsatisfaction due to life, unsatisfaction with the partner, with the life, with the partners, and then. And they showed some regret, some level of regret.
Mm-hmm.
But the regret doesn't mean that you have to do reversal surgery.
Mm.
Regret means that someone has a problem after this type of treatment. But only few percent of these regretful persons will try to do surgery and then to have a genitalia like in a origin gender.
Mm. So I guess sometimes the surgery, because from what I understand, gender affirmation surgery is a treatment for gender dysphoria.
Yes.
And I guess sometimes the treatment just doesn't work the way it was supposed to.
Doesn't work.
Yeah.
Usually due to a very short evaluation. Mm-hmm. Usually due to some wrong way to get to make a letter of recommendation. Why? Mm. Because I found in a discussion with some of regretful persons that they got these letters by phone consultation. For example, now I called you and then tell you something about my life and send a check for your consultation, and in a couple of days you will send me a letter of recommendation and I will go to visit a surgeon who will do surgery.
Right.
This is a big mistake. This is a big mistake, and this is one of the basic goals in our promotions, and then that is we have to follow these persons and try to find the best possible way how to help. If we see that the person is definitely confirmed with the gender dysphoria, we are going to discuss about the best surgical procedure for this person. And then to do this, to make her or his life completely normal and acceptable.
So, it does sound like it's one of these things that if someone, it's possible for the process to be misused or even abused.
Yes, sometimes. No, we can. This is a very, very.
Pulling the Trigger is sponsored by Easy Vape North Shore, the industry's leading direct retailer of the highest quality personal vaporizers, e-cigs, vapes, and Canadian-made e-juice. Located at 987 Marine Drive in North Vancouver, or you can check them out online at www.easyvapecanada.com. You can donate to Pulling the Trigger by using Patreon. Patreon is a membership platform that makes it easy for artists and creators to connect with their fans and get paid. You can do that at www.patreon.com/MarkHughesComic. It can be $1 or it can be $1,000,000. Don't forget to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/PTT604 and our Twitter at PTT604. Upcoming shows. Tragedy plus time served equals comedy. That's my one-man show about my life, and that will be at the Nanaimo Fringe Festival, August 10th, 12th, 14th, 15th, 17th, and 18th. That's at the Harbor City Theater, 25 Victoria Road. Tickets available at www.eventbrite.ca/tragedy-time-served-comedy-tickets. And don't forget about Western Canada's premier dark and dirty comedy show, The Comedy Shocker. Comedy Shocker 18, October 13th at the Rickshaw Theater. Headlined by Aaron Berg from New York City and ISIS Faggot from Afghanistan. Tickets are available at www.comedyshocker.com. Back to our show.
Hard word to use that is abused, because nobody is going to call you and then to send you to surgery. You
know? Right.
It will be abused. Usually, some not good educated persons try to find easier way how to finish process.
Mm.
But in this case, they're going to try. Maybe they're going to try to. They start with a good experience, board certified psychiatrist, and then find some defense in evaluation. And for this reason, they're leaving and then try to find the easier way how to get these letters of recommendation. And this is mistake. And another level of mistake is coming from surgeon. We have plenty of surgeons today who are interested to do this surgery. Why? Because I told you we have 1.4 million in North America, Canada, United States. This is a huge business.
Yeah.
It's a huge business, especially now that insurance companies cover this type of surgery. So if I see that someone signed the letter of recommendation, I will accept the patient and do this to finish one more case, you know, but it is not good. As a surgeon, as an experienced surgeon in this field of surgery, you have to check all data in the previous consultations, evaluations, and then. And if you find that there is some suspicion, much better to send this person for one more consultation to completely independent psychiatrist or a psychologist to be sure that the level of mistake will be minimal.
Yeah, because like you said, once they get the surgery, it's a very difficult and complicated surgery to reverse it.
Oh, absolutely.
And I bet insurance probably doesn't cover the reversal.
Yes. No, I told you I had 11, and nobody was covered by insurance company.
Mm.
Because I never researched about this. Maybe someone, yes, I forgot.
Right.
Really, I don't have this data. I cannot tell you exact data about this.
And this is just a comparison which might not be accurate, but I had
you are right completely, and this is one of the points that I have to check. Really, this is very very mm-hmm. nice question.
Yeah, I had a vasectomy a few years ago, and in Canada, a vasectomy is covered by healthcare. So we have universal. I guess they call it universal healthcare. Do you have that in Serbia?
No, we have a very nice situation here for our transgender persons here, because I started to work with the same goal 7 years ago with our transgender population, and we changed our law, and now surgery is covered with the 66% by a national insurance company.
Okay.
That is much better for our transgender population. It is now completely acceptable. Before that, it was very expensive. And we perform this in private hospitals, that the cost is really very high. Now I perform this in my public hospital, my university hospital, and the cost is not too high. It is approximately maybe 3,000 Canadian dollars, for example. and the 2,000 is covered by a national company. So patient has to pay only 1,000 Canadian dollars to pass whole transition.
Do you get a lot of Canadian patients?
Yeah, of course. I had more than 50, 60.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Why? Because in Canada, you have only one good developed center in Montreal, and that's all.
Yeah, and I think
some of the plastic surgeons perform something like breast augmentation or mastectomy or something like this. Gynecology part is always possible, like hysterectomy and then. But reconstruction of genitalia is possible in only one center in Canada. But you know how is Canada now, how many people live inside. So it's a very good issue to discuss how to help the population. But many Canadian lives and then make a surgery in the United States, Taiwan, comes to us, and then.
I don't think there's very many centers that do it in the United States either, though, is considering their population size, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, you can find now, because in last 3 years, I'm sure that a new 40 centers are opened for this type of surgery.
Okay.
I opened a couple of centers. For example, I opened a center in Mount Sinai, New York, for transgender medicine. Also, I was a guest in Portland, Oregon, and opened a center over there. And they are going now regular with the transgender population, you know. But you have plenty of these, either private hospitals or university hospitals. It is now a very huge interest for this type of surgery. First of all, due to the possibility to be covered by insurance companies.
In Canada, it's covered by our medical is covered by taxes, government.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
I had several person from Canada who came to me with a letter. And letter was signed by the authority in Canadian Ministry of Health. They exactly put, "Dear Professor Georgievich, we have a candidate named John Smith, for example,
yep.
who is coming for planned surgery. We are going to cover all expenses 2 weeks after surgery. Please inform us about the end of surgery and outcome, and we are going to cover all expenses." Plenty of these, yeah.
And then you have to wait 3 months to get paid, probably too.
No. Everything is on time.
Oh,
everything is on time.
Oh,
really?
Wow.
Yeah. I have a really very nice experience.
Oh, okay.
With the Canadian Minister of Health. Really, yeah.
Oh, wow. Usually, whenever you deal with the government, it takes 6 to 8 weeks to get paid.
Yes, I had one interest case also. They paid in advance for one very complicated case. Nobody accepted this case due to a very bad evaluation in general health. And then, and I accepted this person according to the letters that I got by emails, you know. And we planned the surgery. It was last year. And your insurance covered everything in advance. So when I saw the person, when we checked again and then, we discussed with her and told her that she is a not good candidate at the moment. And we cannot accept due to a very high risk. So we sent a person back to Canada and then sent the money back to insurance company.
Oh.
It's normal. Yeah.
Mm. So, as you know, you deal with this business, you're in the business of this, and you're obviously plugged into the internet and stuff like that. Did these procedures are transgenderism, transgender issues are controversial for a variety of reasons. And one of the things I read is that in academia, some people are having a hard time discussing reversals in academic circles, in universities and stuff like that, because some universities are afraid of losing funding if they submit data about reversals.
Yeah.
Have you experienced this?
No, the main experience comes from England. You found in the report
that
one of the persons who had a surgery started to apply for a PhD thesis about breast and reversal surgery after wrong the gender affirmation surgery, and it is now, I think, on the court. But this is the beginning. This is the beginning, and we will discuss more about this maybe in next 6 months or the next 1 year, because we opened something like the Pandora, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And now we are waiting for the persons who showed regret and who stayed into the capsule without possibility to say, I am regretful. I need a help and then. But I am sure that we have more and more persons like this, and we will see real number and incidents very soon.
Right.
For example, one of the issues in our next conference that will be in Buenos Aires in Argentina in the beginning of November, that is this is a meeting of our WPET society. One of the main issues will be reversal surgery and regret after wrong gender affirmation surgery.
Mm-hmm. And I guess more will be revealed at that point. And,
yes, we can do it together, and then to collect all of our cases, you know, and then to put all cases on the table. If I have, for example, 25, someone in London have maybe 37, and in Montreal 17, and then we are going to put this first maybe 200, 300, then to start to research about real reason, about roots.
Common patterns amongst,
and then to try to find a way how to stop with this, how to restrict this.
Do you face any kind of controversy doing your work from the general public or academia or certain circles?
Yes, we had a big problem. For example, in my country, if I compare my beginning on this field, it was very difficult. We performed this surgery 20, 25 years ago in several medical centers, you know, and everybody, almost everybody never accepted this. I discussed about my colleagues. What is the reason that you do this? This is not normal. You are crazy. This is something like fashion. And then, no, this is a medical reason. And then, so now situation is much, much better, definitely. We completely changed this, but I would like to tell you why. Because I spent more than 1,300 minutes in live programs, shows, reports, and then to explain to my population that is not here, that is not fashion, and then that is a real need for normal life.
Right. Is it generally... In Canada, Canada is a fairly progressive country, so transgender people are, for the most part, I'd say, it's tolerated. I mean, there are problems. Is Serbia like that?
Yes. We have now a very nice situation. I compare this, with, first of all, with the number of new cases. For example, last year, I performed 9 surgeries. This year will be more than 20. So, it is a way that we are open the nature, and then we have a new and new who are never be in a behind the line, and then try to live alone with the problem. Now everything is very normal. These persons are completely discovered and want to finish this transition and to continue to live in a normal life. Completely, successfully. Well, so our situation is much, much better. We have, for example, problem in some surrounding countries.
Mm.
It is possible to change the name before surgery,
right.
But not possible to have a surgery and to have a surgery to be covered by a national insurance company. Why? I don't know. But this is a field of human rights. Field of human rights. You know.
One of the controversies that's happening in Canada and North America, and it's, I would imagine it's happening in Europe too right now, is parents bringing their children to doctors to get hormone blockers and things like that. Is that something do you have to deal with patients in those cases?
This is a good question. This is a very nice question. And we are in very, very big debate about advantages and disadvantages of prepubertal hormone blockers. On one way, it is a very nice to prevent a wrong puberty,
mm-hmm.
to prevent, for example, growth of the penis or growth of the breasts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So on another way, with these blockers, you can induce some of the problems with the bones, with the liver, with all other organs, you know.
So the hormone blockers do have some negative side effects.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, because you will stop normal pubertal development. Mm-hmm. Not only genital development during puberty, but development of all other organ systems, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very discutable now, and some countries offer this possibility, like Belgium, Holland, Scandinavian countries. And then in my country, it is not possible because our way is to wait until 16 years of age and then start with some supportive therapy. We never recommended prepubertal hormonal blockers for our patients. What is the wrong thing is this. If you give up blockers, you are sure that this person will be stable.
Mm-hmm.
But our idea is that we have to stay without persons during the puberty to support family, to support the transgender person, and to give all other supports to prevent some difficult psychological or psychiatric problem without any therapy there. So really, in our, I have a series of more than 400 transgender persons who passed a complete transition in the last 25 years. In more than 400, we never had regret. We never had any suicidal idea. We never had any huge problem during the this transition. But you have to work, you know. You have to work. Sometimes it is a voluntary work.
Mm.
It is not always a work for money. It is not always business. You have to be human on this field. And then to help to people. But it's a completely different issue.
Now, one thing you just mentioned is the suicidal thoughts or ideation. I have read that suicidal ideation goes up for patients after they've transitioned. Is that something you've experienced?
I don't have exact data, but according to my experience, I had a really very significant number of persons who had these ideas and some attempts of suicide before transition, before surgery.
Okay.
After that, everything starts to be completely normal.
Okay.
For example, I had one person who completely who had a problem with the parents, with the brother, and then who had sometimes a very huge injuries to the family, to the policemen who are coming to help the family, and then after surgery, everything stopped.
Oh.
He married. It was a she to be he. After surgery, this person as a male, married regularly, found a job, continued to work completely normal.
Wow, yeah.
So it is never possible to say, oh, this will be good, this not will be good, and then you can discuss about result of surgery when you see the candidate for surgery, and then you can discuss about the size of genitalia, appearance of genitalia, function, and then. But in this psychological, psychiatric field, we have to work more with this population. Why? Because when they finish a surgery, they stop to visit the psychiatrists and psychologists.
Mm.
That is a problem also. These persons need a support through the whole life. Hormonal support, psychiatric, psychological support, social support. That is only way how to guarantee normal life.
So it is quite an elaborate procedure, and the procedure doesn't just stop in the surgical in the operating room. It's years and involved. It's what's the medical term when it's a team of people? You'd know it better than me. There's a medical term when it's more than just one doctor. You have to deal with a whole bunch.
Yes, this is a team.
Yeah,
we call it a surgical team.
Yeah,
this is a surgical team that includes surgeons, anesthesiologists,
psychiatrists.
If you discuss about transgender medicine, we have a psychiatrist, psychologists, then social workers, then surgeons, gynecologists, endocrinologists. It's very, very huge amount of different fields of science, you know, who are included in the treatment. Mm. It is a teamwork. This is definitely a teamwork. It is not possible to do alone. For example, to accept a patient for surgery and then to send the patient home. And then to say, I finished. One more, two more, 100 more, $2 million more. this is not business, believe me. This is a real human work. And I also opened one of the new fields in our society, that is to create a volunteer teams and then to visit some non-developed countries to help to transgender persons in the countries like in Brazil, in India, in African countries, and then.
Oh, you've expanded this to like developing nations from the south.
Yes, yeah. Developing nations to help this without money, like a humanitarian work.
This is in some ways a labor of love for you.
Yes,
it sounds very sentimental term, vision. But yeah.
Yes, this is one of my visions, to be a humanitarian worker, because I'm going every year to three places to work completely humanitarian and to help the people, children, women, men, or transgender, and that. This is very, very, very nice for your personal feeling of that, to know that you are going to help someone.
Yeah, and you alluded to earlier that sometimes you don't even do this, you don't even get paid for it. Like sometimes it's basically volunteer.
Basically volunteer, yes. You are going to pay the flight ticket, your accommodation, and to work, to bring instruments, to big material for surgery, and then to work. For example, 1 week to perform 5 to 10 surgeries.
Wow.
This is very important, yeah.
So it sounds like you're probably never bored then, at least. Yeah, not a lot of free time, I imagine.
I would like to tell you at the end of our discussion that this field is really very, very huge. And everybody who thinks that only one aspect of transgender medicine is enough to make a good, maybe good position, good money, good career, it is not true, believe me. Mm. You have to be in a contact with many people. You have to be in a contact with your patients forever, not just at the end of surgery. Forever, to ask, what's happened with you? How are you? Merry Christmas. What's happened with your spouse? Do you have a children? Yeah. And then put this, and then to collect the huge data, and then from this data to learn permanently and to try to find a better and better solution. Because this is something like mission.
It's almost like you enter into a long-term relationship or marriage even with each of your patients, because they're with you for the rest of their lives or your life.
Yes, definitely. Oh. Definitely.
Oh, wow.
Without this the information, you will never conclude about the quality of your work, about the quality of your medicine, treatment, relationship with the person who requests your help, and that. For this reason, you have to create, we call this in medicine, long-term follow-up. Long-term follow-up that is no less than 5 to 10 years after surgery. Only according to this, we can make a good conclusions.
And therefore contribute to better science.
Absolutely, absolutely. But you can check this if you put some keywords like transsexual medicine, transgender surgery, something like this, you will find who publish results and who follow the patients. You know, it's very small, very few centers in the world.
Wow. Well, Dr. Georgievic, we've been talking for a while, and I don't want to keep you much longer. I'm gonna ask you a question that I ask all my guests on for my show. So, for the average person listening, just the average man, woman, or other. Do you have any closing thoughts, any final words you'd like them to think about?
Yes, I would like to tell that we have to work permanently to have our mission, to follow our ideas, and then to create a better life for everybody who is in our neighborhood, who is in this world. Because this world is it's for all of us, not only for some reserved persons.
Well, excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time, and have a good day. Hopefully it doesn't rain too much over there.
Thank you very much for your calling and for your time to make interview with me.
Okay. Have a good day.
Bye-bye, you too.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it, folks. Another episode of Pulling the Trigger. Maybe we got mad. Maybe we got sad. Maybe we understood. And maybe we laughed. My hope is that you got an experience out of this episode. Remember, Pulling the Trigger is sponsored by Easy Vape North Shore, the industry's leading direct retailer of the highest quality personal vaporizers, e-cigs, vapes, and Canadian-made e-juice. Located at 987 Marine Drive in North Vancouver, or check them out online at www.easyvapecanada.com. And you can donate to Pulling the Trigger by using Patreon. Patreon is a membership platform that makes it easy for artists and creators to connect with their fans and get paid. And that's at www.patreon.com/MarkHughesComic. Don't forget to like our social media, facebook.com/PTT604 and Twitter @PTT604. Until next time, stay triggered.